When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Welcome to Good for a Weekend,
the podcast where two friends talk about Taylor Swift
and share your spicy confessions.
I'm Cressy Cornis.
And I'm MK Ashford.
Our third ever Swifty Confessions episode will be coming out on April 11th. It will be a very special episode because it's our 100th.
You have until April 1st to email us your Swifty Confessions to gfaweekend@gmail.com. Please include what you'd like to be called as well and your preferred pronouns.
And if you're a new Weekender, here's a quick explanation of what we're looking for in your Swifty Confession.
We want to hear your spiciest hot takes, embarrassing moments as a fan, unpopular opinions, hills that you would die on, your crazy fan theories, and anything else Taylor related that you'd like to confess to us.
Think of us as your specially appointed Swifty therapist.
Did you weirdly like Taylor and Maddie Healy? Are you a me defender? Do you think 1989 is overrated? Are you a Joe Alwyn apologist? Whatever it is, we're listening.
We are accepting submissions now, right now. So be sure to send yours to gfaweekend@gmail.com by April 1st. All we ask is that you please include what you'd like us to call you as well as your preferred pronouns so we can discuss your confession properly.
And we're so excited to hear what you have to spill.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Hello, I'm Gavin.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with It's the Interview Series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you, as always, for making your way here and checking out the series. I do hope you enjoy what you're hearing enough to hit that subscribe button, because I put out three new interviews every single week. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones as well. And of course, you can subscribe at all the usual spots, including iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Make sure to subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And that's me. I'm Kyle Meredith, talking today with Gavin DeGraw about his brand new record called Face the River. It's an album that serves as a tribute to his late parents, and we're going to be talking about that, writing the record in that direction. He's going to tell us this amazing, heartwarming, heartbreaking story about his dad getting to listen to the entire record before passing, as well as working with one of our favorite producers, Dave Cobb, and wanting to write in the Astori style of folks like Bob Seger and Bruce Springsteen, Billy Joel, mixed with Sam Cooke and Jimmy Cliff, as he says. Gavin's also going to talk about taking some artistic chances, playing the album in full during the upcoming shows, and the time he found himself on stage with Metallica's Lars Ulrich, R.E.M.'s Mike Mills, and tennis legend John McEnroe. All that and more. Let's talk about Face the River. It's Kyle Meredith with Gavin DeGraw.
Wow, man. Thank you, dude. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, man.
No
good
problem.
To be here.
Yeah. Let me tell you first how much I'm instantly in love with your new record, Face the River. It's beautiful. I know there's a huge story to go along with this, and the songs, man, I mean, I'm not telling you anything you haven't heard before. You are blessed with an amazing voice and talent as a songwriter, and it is all on display on this album.
Thank you so much, man. What a compliment, man. Really. Thank you. This was, for me, this particular record, this was a whole different thing for me. I kind of been through it over the course of the last several years. Everybody's been through it. As you know, the world kind of got its ass kicked mutually, for a couple of years with COVID and, some other stuff that happened, before COVID, kind of a series of losses in the family for a few years, and then COVID hit, and then my dad got diagnosed, and it was just fucking everything was all wrong. This record was kind of a race against time to finish a record while my dad was still, on the planet. And I got to play it for him really just in time. And, I played him once I got to play him the whole record, my brother and I hopped in the truck and we went for a drive, and a half hour later, the phone rang, your dad's having an emergency. And that was pretty much the last opportunity, I would have had to have him, cognizant and not in pain and stuff like that. So I felt like there was a little bit of that closure for me as the son, wanting to give something to him, kind of one last gift, and he'd been begging me to hear the record, hear what I'd been working on. Before I got to make the record, I had a conversation with management, and they were saying, hey, so what do you want the next record to be like? And I said, well, I really like those Chris Stapleton records, and those Brandi Carlile records sound really good. And Jason Isbell records sound real good. They're like, well, you're naming all the same producer over and over again, And they're like, it's a guy named Dave Cobb. I said, oh, Dave Cobb. Yeah, I've heard that name before,
One of the best producers in the game this last decade. Absolutely.
Completely, man. Absolutely, man. And they said, well, maybe we can set up a conversation, And Dave agreed to lunch, and we went to lunch, and right in Midtown, Nashville, because I live downtown, because I'm addicted to nightlife. So I met up with him, about a mile or so away, and we sat down for lunch. And this happened to me one other time where I was expecting some old dude to walk in because he had so much success and had success for a long time. Happened to me years earlier with Max Martin. I met Max Martin years and years earlier in Stockholm, and he walked in to meet up, and I was expecting some dude in his 50s, 60s walk in. Instead, some young cool guy walks in with awesome hair and cool facial hair, looking more like a star than any of the stars I know, and it kind of happened again with Dave. Dave walked in, he had I would call it luxurious hair. Actually, he had nice luxurious hair, man. Yeah, cool facial hair. I was like, oh shit, he looks like a star too, right? Like more like a star than the stars, And he sat down and he goes, hey man, so what do you want to do? And I said, well, I've been getting my ass kicked for a few years now, and I got a lot to say, but I don't want to do any co-writing. The first few records I made, I wrote them alone, and I did well with them, and I still believe in those records. And I want to write this one alone too, but I want the greatest producer in the world to record it, and help put it together, and that'd be you. And he goes, fuck it, man. Yeah, let's do it. And I feel like I really lucked out and that he even bothered taking that meeting, because I don't really see myself as necessarily worthy to get in a room with a guy like Dave. So I was really flattered that he took the lunch, And then we got in the room, and I really appreciated how he challenged me. I think in general, I think personally, I work better under pressure. It's better when the Armageddon moment, the planet, my world's going to blow up. And he was good at kind of applying that sort of thing and testing me, and not permitting me to make a typical kind of album, an expected type of album. He really pushed me and made me, made me stretch, which I really appreciate, because, without his hand in the challenging element of things of going, man, I think you should do something crazier than where you're at right now, or, take some chances. And I like that, how he pushed me in that regard. I think we could all use a guy like Dave Cobb to do that,
And there are those moments, by the way. I mean, I'm going to ask about a handful of songs, but even like these very specific moments, those chords in Destiny, those are the goosebump makers. I mean, just the choice, of notes that you're taking there, and Lighthouse. I mean, God, the powerful, the way it builds, those are the unexpected moments for me. Not that I didn't think that you couldn't do those. It's just, those were the moments that I didn't see coming. And then suddenly you're in the middle of them and you're going, oh God, I'm just holding on for the ride at that point.
Yeah, man. Wow. Thank you. You're picking some of my favorites. Cause those are for guys like me, musicians, guys who love listening to people jam and stretch. and go for it. Those two recordings, I think, are some of the more challenging, you know, as a singer. And, you know, oftentimes, at least for me as a fan of music, when I hear somebody going for it and I'm not sure they're going to get there, that's exciting to me, you know? And because, you know, they're challenging themselves. There was a guy I used to go see in upstate New York. His name is Morale Coriel. And he was Larry Coriel's, one of Larry Coriel's sons, who was, a pretty well-known jazz fusion guitar player, Larry. And he had a couple sons. Julian, right, was one of them, and Morale. Morale was a great guitar player, singer. Man, I was a teenager. I used to go see him play at this place called the Downtown Tavern in the town of New York. And I'd go on the weekdays, you know, and I'd bump it up. I became friends with some local guys out there. And the thing I loved about Morale is he would never play the same lick twice. And when he played a lick, you could tell he never played that lick before. And, you know, and he would, oh, he was always going for it. You know, there was always, he was always stretching. And as a musician, and as a wannabe musician, it was so inspiring watching somebody take chances in front of you. You know, he wasn't playing what he knew he could execute. He was playing what he felt in the moment, and you could tell, you know. And sometimes he, you know, might not get there for a moment or two, but he was one of those guys who didn't care, because what he cared about was going for it, you know. And so, you know, on those couple songs on this record, there are some moments there where, you know, we're just fucking going for it, man, you know. And maybe you don't get there, like you heard it in your head, but it's like fuck it, I'm going for it, right? And, you know, roll tape, man, you know, and then maybe we'll get there, maybe we won't, but record it anyway, you know. And so, man, I'm happy you like those. That's cool. That really means a lot. That means a lot.
Well, like I said, those moments are all over it. And of course, you know, having to, you know, really pay attention to the lyrics, which, you know, there are some people like me, I'm a rhythm and melody guy. That's the things I'll hear first before the lyrics. Yeah. But there's, of course, something about this album right here where, you know, even before I exactly knew the story that you were telling, you know, it was like, oh, I need to be paying attention to this. And let's talk about that too. We haven't actually hit like the big point of this, because as you talk about playing this for your dad, and the reason, you know, being, as I read it anyway, is this does serve as a tribute to both your parents. And if that's exactly the case, what is the story you wanted to tell, and how did you want to tell it?
I just wanted these people to be remembered. You know, I wanted to celebrate them. I didn't want to bum people out. I just wanted to tell a version of some of its narration, some of its just emotion of some of the things that either I was feeling or witnessing, or was appreciating about them. And, you know, it's certainly no funeral march of a record. It's really kind of, I think there's something triumphant about the overall texture of the record sonically and story-wise. And I wanted to do it in the vein of in such a way of blending some of the people who I think do it well, and wanted to be able to do it like that, but I can't do it like that because they're them and I'm just me, right? So say the way a Bob Seger would put together a story, or a Springsteen would put together a story, or a Billy Joel, but blend it with some of my favorite singing of, you know, those desperate howls of a Sam Cooke or a Jimmy Cliff, you know, of, you know, people who I admire from different genres of music, that when you blend them all together, I just call it American music. And, you know, the old parameters of, you know, if you look like something, you got to be categorized as some other form of music. I don't believe in that stuff. You know, I think that there's a lot of room in music just for music that feels right for you. And, you know, and in this sort of smoothie of a society that we're in right now, I think it's okay to make records that really stretch to different genres and, you know, combine different influences that you have, particularly for us musicians. You know, typically when you're really a musician, you're a fan of a lot of different kinds of music, and you don't want to be beholden to any particular style. It's too limiting, you know, and so So I just wanted to stretch and kind of pay homage to those artists that I'm a huge fan of, the Stevie Wonders, the Elton Johns, you know, but do it in the way that, you know, that I'm capable of, which is not as good as them. But I'm some weird little amalgamation of my fanhood of all of them, you know, and that's kind of, you know, as a musician, that's really all we are, is kind of a blend of our bad impersonations of our influences, you know.
there was one part in here, I guess, speaking of that, on the song Chasing Wind. That's what you're doing on the keys right at the beginning of that. And I heard a little bit of You Can Leave Your Hat On, that style.
Oh, yeah. You know, there you go. Yes, you get it. And so what I was actually thinking about was exactly that type of thing. But I was thinking about Up on Cripple Creek, the band.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
I was thinking of that kind
of one of the movie. Greatest songs right there. One of my favorites.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And thank you. Yeah. Because that, when I think about the band was one of those uncategorizable types of groups, you know, where you could tell they had lots of different influences and you could tell they were just deep in the love of the Muscle Shoals stuff, but you could tell that they were huge Merle Haggard fans and you could feel all that stuff, you know? But I felt like, ooh, if there was a way to blend a moment like an Up on Cripple Creek with a Stevie Wonder type of chord progression or mode, you know, with the melody, and it would be a nice little, you know, cross section of music, and you know, just, man, it's just art, you know, you're just experimenting and trying to get this stuff out of your body, and you know, and do it in a way that you feel like isn't all used up yet, you know? Do it in a way, you know, that feels at least fresh for you as the, you know, as the player and the writer. I want to pay homage without sounding derivative, you know?
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
I mean, it makes sense too, especially, you know, reading some of your biography. I feel like we came up in not exact similar situations, but sort of similar situations. My parents didn't go to Woodstock, but, you know, we did have up here. Oh, well, I'm in Louisville now, but, you know, in the middle of Kentucky, we'd have these, you know, lake parties, the river parties and everything, where, you know, everybody would have the acoustics out there. And I read about I think the word hootenanny was thrown into your bio.
Hey, that's right. We have done the hootenanny.
Yeah.
We have done the hootenanny. Cause when I was a kid, my great uncle Earl, he was a dairy farmer, and you know, our family reunions were always out at his farm. You know, he had I think it was 160 acres in an area out near, I believe it was Kerhonkson, New York. And, you know, all, you know, the granddad and his brothers and, you know, my dad and mom and, you know, the brothers, the cousins, the sisters, and you'd see the old timers get out, and there weren't much necessarily like real players, but it wasn't about that. And I think that's also the reminder of music in general. It's not necessarily being the best. It's not about that. It's about the community of getting together and hanging out, sharing song, and the joy of having that experience, you know, hanging out in front of a campfire with guitars, or, you know, somebody would have like bongos or a tambourine. It didn't matter if you played good or not. It's not really what music's about. You know, it's about feeling good. And that was just, you know, part of the family culture. And it's one of those things that there was this great family upstate that I was friends with, and they were all great musicians. They were called the Rausches, right? The Rausch family. All these brothers married all these sisters, right? And it was pretty cool. Like there were, I don't know how many brothers, maybe five sisters. They all married each other. The one of the greatest families, and they were all great musicians and good athletes. This is one of the, you know, just great, you know, the lucky gene pool crew, you know, everybody that was good looking, you know. And you'd go to their house and they'd have Oktoberfest at their house, and you'd be like 100 family members, and everybody played and sang. It was a whole thing, you know. You're part of this whole local culture once you hung out with this family. It was a very special thing, and I just think that's really, you know, that's what music's about. It's about that community element of things that it really creates a familial environment, you know, when done, you know, loosely, as I think it should be. It should be loose.
And I'll say, you know, speaking of live, you're going to take this album out and not just play some songs from it, but the whole thing. And, and of course, it's such a powerful album. Sure. But how rare it is for any artist, especially an artist who has, you know, multiple albums and hits, to say, here's my new album. You're going to get it from start to finish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, does that feel like a trust fall with the audience?
You know, man, the way we're putting it out, at least the way we're advertising it within our, you know, within our group of fans, is we wanted to let them know early on that this little run here, this is a special type of run, and that, you know, this isn't geared toward making a bunch of money and putting a bunch of asses in seats. This is a more of a fan experience, really environment. You know, it's not I'm going out to make a living and play some music. This is, you're really catering to a special group of fans who've been with you from the beginning, because they'll tend to be the people who really want to come out and see something as experimental as this in some ways. And so I know that it would be typically a lot of information for a new listener in particular, right? Because if you weren't necessarily a fan of the other music, you'd be like, I don't want to listen to that guy play a bunch of new shit for an hour, you know? And guess what? I don't blame you. You know, I don't listen to me either, you know? So, you know, but if, you know, if someone is already, you know, likes the type of thing that we're doing, we really wanted to let them know up front that it's going to be a different kind of show and a different approach to playing a show. It's not, you know, there's not going to be any pyro and stuff like that at this thing. You know, the type of tour that this is, and we had a very detailed discussion. You know, I had a conversation with my team and we all discussed it. And I said, I thought it would be nice to go out and play the kind of rooms that I used to play before I ever even had a record deal, you know, playing small rooms. You know, of course, you got to sprinkle in some of the larger rooms to help fund playing those small rooms. So we'll do a few of those along the way. But, you know, it was important to me to go play the Bitter End in New York City. That's a very small room. You're probably looking at, I don't know, 200 people. And, but, you know, I wanted to play there because the Bitter End was the first place in New York City that ever gave me a gig. You know, I wanted to go back and play there. And so we're going to do a couple nights there and go back and play Antones, you know. And, you know, back in the day, I mean, I played Antones before I ever had a record deal back in the day. You know, I remember I was playing a bar in New York and this famous tennis player came up to me and he said, "Hey, man, you want to come to Austin, Texas and play some music with some guys I know?" I said, "Yeah, fuck yeah." And so this guy named Jim Courier, awesome, awesome guy. So I went down there and the next thing you know, this guy, he's like, "Yeah, man, this tennis player wants to get up and play guitar." I was like, "Yeah, fuck yeah, go ahead." And sure enough, I'm up there like playing keys and John McEnroe walks up on stage with the guitar. I said, "Oh shit, it's John McEnroe." And I look behind me and Lars is playing drums. Fucking Lars from Metallica was on a drum. And I looked over and I was like, "Holy shit, that's Mike Mills on bass." I didn't realize, you know, I'm playing with a bunch of, I was playing with a bunch of celebrities, you know? And it's cool now to think back and go, you know, I want to go play these kinds of rooms, and actually ending up in those old rooms, or at least the names of those places again. And, you know, keeping the legacy of those local joints alive. And I think that's something all of us musicians should, you know, we need to remember that those clubs are the reason that we're out here. You know, they gave us opportunities. They didn't necessarily have the money to, but they said, "Hey kid, here's $30. here's a couple of drink tickets, not, you know, knock yourself out. And that kind of stuff kept you going when you were coming up.
Well, if you're going to hook back up with Lars at any point, at least then you can bring back the pyro too, because yeah. Gavin DeGraw pyro show is, I think, what we're all missing.
Could you imagine? I know pyro is so the opposite of me.
It's if you just need to know when to use it. Like, you know, I'm thinking of one of you, like, you know, I don't want to be, it's, you know, those moments right there, you know.
Get out the t-shirt.
What Paul McCartney would do, you know.
Pull the t-shirt on stage. So bad.
I'm really looking forward to seeing the show now. Don't let me down when that happens.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Dude, seriously, honestly, this record is so damn good. Wow. Face the River. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it. Congratulations on this. And, you know, I hope you and Dave work together again in the future, because the recipe that you all are making, I'm all for it.
I really appreciate that, man. It means a lot. Really means a lot, man. And I hope you get to come out to the gig, man. I'd love for you to see what we're doing live. And, you know, we just think that real is where it's at. That's all.
Absolutely. I'll be there.
Awesome.
Thanks, all right, bro. Man. Take care. And thank you, and thanks so much.
Thank you, man. Have a great day.
My thanks to Gavin DeGraw. Again, the new album is called Face the River. And thanks to you as well for checking out the episode. Before you get out of here, I do hope, again, you hit that subscribe button. Three new interviews. New interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. Make sure to subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on these social media spots, mostly on Twitter, but also Facebook and Instagram, all three of them at Kyle Meredith. Do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Honor, pleasure, mine, man. Pleasure.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Hey there, it's Kyle Meredith from Kyle Meredith With. After you check out the latest episode of my show, be sure to check out some of our other great programs on the Consequence Podcast Network, including Standing BTS, a bi-weekly podcast covering all things BTS and ARMY, and The Opus, Consequence's original documentary podcast exploring legendary albums and their lasting legacies. So head to consequence.net to listen to these podcasts and many great others.